In the travel news, Southwest adds Palm Springs and Miami to its map. Both wonderfully cool day places to go today, I'm certain. And we tell you why that's significant.
In our Smarter Traveler segment at 3:20, we address the airlines dropping change fees. Or did they? We have our first draft of what spring training might look like for baseball fans next spring. And we remind you to beware of items that look free in your hotel room.
COVID has been a disaster for almost everyone in tourism. We found an exception on the coast of southern England. Learn about ghost ship tours. Truly one of the most unique interviews we've ever done on the Travel Guys comes up at 3:35.
Mark has one of his just one man's opinion rants on the need for more COVID testing to revive travel. That's coming up at 3:50, followed by a segment on Burning Man and getting your passport.
Did you know Burning Man started in Golden Gate Park, Tom?
I didn't, but I would almost guess that that would be where it started.
Yeah, we'll tell that story later on. Cool story. Thanks for lending an ear to the program. It's all about the journey. Welcome to the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
To Alaska, I go north to Russia's own.
All I want born in every man.
I come from a land, land, land.
I bless the rains down in Africa.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
With the show.
Welcome, welcome. Hello, everyone. It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys every Sunday, 3 to 4, here at KFBK, also on iHeartRadio. Podcasts available as well. And, of course, visit TravelGuysRadio.com. You can get the podcasts there and the links to all the information we talk about on the program. And today, especially important, as we've got a couple of really good guests that you'll want to follow up and follow them in one fashion or another. Good to see you, Mark. You've pretty wilted over there, hey?
Nice to see you. Yes, we're a couple miles apart here in Sacramento / Rancho Cordova. It's just hot. I went outside. Man, it's just hot. Unfortunately, fortunately, the smoke, I guess, is actually holding the temperature down 2 or 3 degrees. So I suspect, however, that works both ways, that once the heat gets in through the smoke, that it's that much harder for it to get out at night. And I hear the wind's coming Tuesday, so I don't know. I'm just, but it's warm over here, yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait, you know. And then the air quality is, I think it's today it was started off in the unhealthy range, even more unhealthy for those that within the sensitive group, but it's just really, really bad.
Well, it's that red. New fire down there by Madera that's kind of in the foothills-ish, and it's spitting out a lot of smoke, and it's all coming our way.
Yeah, and, the issue becomes unhealthy to get out, and you got to stay in where it's nice and cool, so I think this would be a good day to stay in and listen to the Travel Guys. What's
that
new
would,
with you and
it.
Sports Leisure Vacation? What's going
well,
on?
Well, we're getting fairly close here to carefully launching a couple of multiple day trips. We have a trip to Santa Cruz, two nights at the Dream Inn on the beach. So good way to get rid of the smoke. Go to the beach midweek after Labor Day. Did you see they closed the beaches in Santa Cruz and Monterey over the weekend? I thought that was a pretty smart move. But anyways, we're going down there with about 24 people. That's the middle of not this coming week, the next week. And have a group going next Saturday on the train. One of Chris Hart's, the Fox River train, they have a wine train. So we have some folks going for a luncheon down the river and then coming back up to ride the train next weekend. And then the Santa Cruz trip, we did a trip about a week ago. Just a little thing to try to see what was going on called Past the Corn Nuts. We took people out to Davis Ranch out at Slough House, bought corn and all the other stuff. Right. And then we went up to Akita's Pie Shop.
Akita Pie, yeah.
Akita Pie up there in Auburn and bought them out. And then the bus was pretty much loaded down. We came home. So it was just a really simple trip. We had a lot of fun. So we
tell me.
Yeah.
Tell me your reaction. How did people respond to that little day trip? And how are they responding to the couple of outings that you just mentioned?
Well, keep in mind that people who don't want to travel are not going to be there. So the worst thing that can happen is they can shame you on Facebook for being out traveling and creating unsafe conditions for people. But we're not taking people places where we don't feel like we can control the situation a little bit, at least under normal conditions. So we're being extra careful, and we have protocols with everybody cleaning their hands every time they get on the bus, doing temperature checks once a day. We've got special seating spread out on the coach so that no more than half of it is full. We're putting our feet back in the water here a little at a time, and trusting that our people are folks who, you know, nobody wants to wear a mask, but, you know, if you don't want to wear a mask right now, you just don't travel. I mean, it's not really an argument. It's just, you know, just stay home. And when the masks aren't needed anymore, then come on, you know, I mean, it's easy. So our folks are pretty much okay with being safe. Most of my travelers are mature travelers. They're older people. So we're all into keeping each other safe. And the other thing is that if you're out traveling, even if you're out for a day with 25 people, you don't want to be spreading something around. So we're doing everything we can to keep people safe and to go very slowly. And as you see everything opening back up, you know, museums are 25%, and everybody's taking it as slowly as they can, because we're all trying to, you know, to be reasonably safe. At least that's our point of view.
Well, there you go. Okay. At the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we bring you up to date on the travel news. And with the news today, once again, Mark Hoffman.
So, speaking of masks, airlines and stuff like that, airlines have the first list of banned people is out. And it doesn't, you know, have names, but it does say, the press release says, that over 700 people have been banned from flying U.S. domestic carriers since the mandate went into effect, according to the Los Angeles Times. Not all the carriers reported. Southwest and American are not on the list, so therefore that makes that 700 number even more impressive, in my opinion. Delta leads the way with 270 passengers on its no-fly list, followed by United with 150. The point of all of this is, again, if we haven't said it enough times, if you don't want to wear a mask, don't go out and try to get on an airplane, or don't get on an airplane and think you're going to be cool and take the mask off as soon as you get on the plane, because, you know, they're going to politely ask you to put it back on. And when you don't, they're going to say, OK, 13C, that's Mr. Hoffman. Let's go up and make a note. And then when Mr. Hoffman gets home, he gets a note from Delta Airlines. It just says, hey, you know, we understand that this was tough for you to comply with, so we'll see you when masks are over. Don't bother buying a ticket in the meantime because you're on a list. So, you know, it eliminates all of the confrontations and everything, and it makes it a pretty cut and dried situation. But it does make one wonder. You get on an airplane and you have that situation, you're going to wonder whether or not they put you on the list or not.
Now the quick question here, okay. you decide that you're not going to wear your mask on the plane. You mm-hmm. take it off after you get there. They come and tell you that you're going to be put on the naughty list.
No, they probably don't tell you that.
Oh, they don't. Well,
no, because the whole point of this is non-confrontational.
Okay. Well, do they force you to put the mask back on or get off the plane?
Well, I mean, let's pretend I'm suggesting in this scenario that you put the mask on the plane, and now we're up at 35,000 feet, and you've decided to take the mask off, and the flight attendant comes by and says, "Mr. Romano, we require that you wear a mask on the plane," and you say, "Oh yeah, okay, whatever," and then you don't put the mask on. And the flight attendant walks back and she says, oh, okay, Mr. Romano in 13F didn't bother to put the mask on after I asked him politely. So she goes up and takes the manifest and makes a note, and it's done.
Yeah, but still, what you're looking at, all the other passengers are going to have to put up with the unmasked Romano in L5.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, but hypothetically, you're only going to do that once.
Yeah,
so I mean, they're going to let you get away with it once, but they're not going to let you get away with it again. So they're weeding them out, and also they're eliminating the situation on an airplane that's up in the sky that somebody's going to start yelling at a flight attendant or something and create a situation in the sky.
Okay,
TSA. No, that's okay. You can ask questions anytime you like. TSA saw its busiest day since mid-March on Thursday. Almost 900,000 people flew. That's, to give you an idea, that's about 42% of who flew on Thursday before Labor Day last year. They expect similar numbers through the weekend, but those will be by far the biggest numbers since the COVID crisis started, and that'll put the airlines at roughly 40%. They are looking for a pretty serious drop-off maybe after this weekend, so we'll see. Southwest Airlines is launching initial routes to Miami and Palm Springs this winter, two cities that they have previously ignored. They go to Fort Lauderdale and Ontario, two nearby airports, but they will now fly to Miami and Palm Springs. No word yet if there will be service from Sacramento to Palm Springs. One of the reasons that Southwest is doing this, the same reason United has added a bunch of flights to Florida, business travel is basically gone. So what these guys are doing is they're trying to add service and flights to recreational destinations, leisure destinations, in hope that they may be able to, if they can get you there a little more directly than the other guy, then you're probably going to take them to Florida or Palm Springs or wherever it might be. And Miami has been a hole in the Southwest map for quite a while. Speaking of route maps, American Airlines, and we talked about added service to Mexico. This kind of slipped in last week. American Airlines, starting in December, is going to run once a week to Los Cabos from Sacramento with an Airbus 319, which is a pretty good size aircraft. So if you're a fan of going to Cabo San Lucas, you can go down and get back once a week. Uber has, speaking of mask wearing, has a new selfie function. Here's the way Uber is doing the mask thing. If a driver reports you as being somebody who doesn't wear a mask, then Uber will send you a note and say, you know what, before you travel again, we'd like to see a picture of you with a mask. So then you have to send them a selfie of you with a mask, which hypothetically shows that you own a mask, know how to put it on, and would be, now that they've called it to your attention, would be willing to wear one next time you travel with Uber. A great little story here. There's a remote American outpost that sits. It's on the same island. It's up on the Canadian-U.S. border. Part of the island, a tiny slice of the island, falls below the parallel that defines the U.S.-Canadian border. So these people are on a Canadian island, but they're U.S. They're in the U.S. So when all of this thing came up where they couldn't go cross the border, these people are stuck. There's no ferry boat to the U.S. from where they are. They would just cross the border easily and go into Canada, but they can't do that now. So they've let them go like once a month to get supplies and stuff, but even that has gotten some pushback from local residents and things like that. Finally, they have a ferry boat that's going to take them once a week. They lie just south of the 49th parallel, which is the thing that divides the United States and Canada. It's really a fascinating story about a little town of about 1,300 Americans, and they're in on a Canadian island in U.S. territory is the best way to describe it. And one last little item here, the Hotel Hana in Maui, a 75-unit property at the end of the legendary Hana Highway, has become affiliated with Hyatt Hotels. So if you are headed to Hana, good luck. I would fly there if I could because the drive is a killer. But if you're headed to beautiful Hana on the island of Maui, the hotel there, the main hotel there now, is a Hyatt, and that's your travel news for today.
Once again, follow along at TravelGuysRadio.com. Coming up after the break in the Smarter Traveler segment, we're going to address that airline story about them being change fees. We'll do that. And Mark has some interesting information on what to expect for spring training next year with us baseball fans. That's all coming up right here on the Travel Guys. Here we go. Welcome, everyone. It is the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, we're your hosts, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And not to be redundant, but here it goes. Follow along at TravelGuysRadio.com. It's our little website. And, you know, I really appreciate it when you people go and poke around and take a look at some of this stuff. We have a lot of things on the website that are never covered on the show. And you could spend a day there with all kinds of fun stuff. So check it out, TravelGuysRadio.com. Okay, so, Mark. We saw it all over TV. Everybody's getting rid of those chart change fees and so forth. What's the deal?
Well, the first thing is, remember that a change fee is separate from a cancellation fee. Okay.
Okay.
So they didn't get rid of cancellation fees. They just got rid of change fees. So you wanted to change from going on this date to going on this date, you used to have to pay a fee unless you're on Southwest Airlines. Now you don't have to pay a fee to do that. But if you were deciding to travel on, you know, the 27th of September and suddenly you can't go, a cancellation fee is still part of the picture. So that's an important thing to remember.
Right now, are the cancellation fees, have they made any changes to the amounts or anything?
No, they're pretty much icky. They're like $200 for most of the major carriers.
Right.
They're as unfair as the change fees were.
Okay, and then I heard something about beware that these change fees may not be applicable if you're purchasing one of those super no-frills tickets.
Aha, you're a very wise man, Mr. Romano. That is correct. The basic economy, the save, yeah, you know, $40, $50, $60, $70 for for not having a seat assignment and taking a bag and being the last person on the plane and all that kind of jazz, means that you're not covered by this waiver of no change fees. So if something happens, you have one of those tickets, you have to change, you're still going to get stuck. Now, some of the airlines are allowing those basic economy tickets to be part of this waiver for a few months and then having it kick in later on, like around January the 1st. But beware, if you're buying that really super cheap ticket that's designed to compete with Southwest fares, and if you're doing that, why wouldn't you just buy Southwest, who doesn't have all of that stupid, ridiculous stuff to start? I mean, the Southwest guys have got to be sitting around chortling to themselves last week, because here these guys are getting kudos for doing something that Southwest has basically done for as long as I can remember. Now, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, I think a lot of times it's a situation that Southwest doesn't go there. Maybe a place that isn't serviced by Southwest.
That, in some cases.
And because, I mean, I compare the prices, and you would almost think if Southwest went everywhere United did, why would you ever take United? Because it's always way more.
Well,
and so that's my thought.
If you started flying a long time ago before Southwest came to Sacramento and you sunk your loyalty into Delta, American, United, TWA, Northwest, U.S. Air, America West, any one of the other carriers that's been swallowed up and your points and your loyalty and stuff have been swallowed up into one of these three or four major carriers, if you're like me and you started flying before Southwest got here, unfortunately, all your eggs are in a different basket.
Okay,
so your lifetime miles and your ability to be able to, wow, there's a first class seat available, maybe I'll be high enough up on the list to be able to luck into something like that. And the business travelers for years have not liked Southwest because they don't have those 12 seats at the front of the cabin that you can get upgraded into. So if that's the only way you will fly is to pay that ridiculous price to sit there, then you're not going to fly on Southwest. Here's another thing that's important to know about these change fees. If you change your ticket and, you know, you bought it a long time ago and now you're flying in 14 days and you need to fly in 12 days. Well, now you're going to pay that 12-day fare instead of that 162-day fare that you paid when you bought the ticket. So if the 12-day fare is higher, then you're going to pay the difference. And in most cases, once you get inside 21 days, the fare is going to be higher. So you're going to call and say, well, you know, there's no change fee. And they're going to say, yeah, but there's a $162 difference in airfare. And United and American have already said, yeah, and you're going to pay that. So so this whole thing comes with a lot of asterisks. And the airlines are making sure that all of those asterisks are basically in their favor. Plus, here's another thing to think about. $3 billion last year the airlines got out of change fees. They're in desperate times for money. Do you really think they're going to walk away from $3 billion? I don't think so. I think that they've got a plan for something to replace this. And as soon as they get some more money from the government here in a week or two, why, then you can bet within a week or two after that they will spring that on us. United did something kind of nice. They added standby same-day travel for no change fee or increased airfare on the same day, which is truly, for business travelers, is a real benefit. So it remains to be seen. The airlines this time giveth, but everybody believes that the airlines taketh away is probably just around the corner. Okay, couple of things here that I wanted to tell you about. One is spring training for baseball next year. We're doing all the sports all at once right now. Baseball season is still going on right now, but they've started to look ahead, and the Tampa Sports Authority, which has a field in Tampa where the Yankees play their spring training games, has already budgeted $1.7 million in order to change the field so that they will be able to socially distance people and be able to operate their ballpark regardless of they've made changes in they've got automatic cleaning things at night that come on, and they've done all kinds of things so you won't have to touch things and stuff like that. There's a complete article at travelguysradio.com. And if you have an interest, not even if you're a baseball fan, but if you have an interest in things that might be held outside, it's something that you might want to look at, because this is the first major attempt by anybody to spend a lot of money and meet all of these new rules. And finally, our buddy Christopher Elliott wrote a column last week and talked about how some things in hotels aren't free. He went into a DoubleTree hotel in Phoenix, and there were two bottles of water there. And it said free on the bottle of water. And then if you looked more closely, it said, if you're a silver, dime, gold, or diamond Hilton member, otherwise it's $3 a person. And his lament was that there's an increasing number of things inside hotel rooms that are oftentimes not free, and they don't tell you that they're not free. So be careful. The other thing is that if you traveled even occasionally with Hilton or Marriott or one of the big hotel chains, become a member of their frequent traveler club, because then when you check in, you get nice things like a couple of bottles of water and some other little things that, you know, sometimes those bottles of water are just an afterthought. I don't touch them. They sit there the whole time I check out. But sometimes when I check in and I get up to my room and that cold bottle of water in the refrigerator is just a little tiny thing that makes a difference. So absolutely, if you don't want to pay $3 for them, or wonder when you get in a room, here's another deal. Luxury hotels have started doing this thing, especially when they know a family is checking in, of putting a plush animal. And then the kid falls in love with the animal, and the animal's not free. It comes with a price, usually a high price. So anyway, be careful when you're checking into hotel rooms. Things that are not free, that look to be free, may not actually be.
All right. Coming up on the back half of the show, we're going to find out the history of Burning Man. Let's see. Mark has his Just One Man opinion, and we're going to visit about Ghost Ship. Hey there, it's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel Guys here on KFBK, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And as we've mentioned a couple of times, heading this direction, we got a chance to make a call to the UK earlier in the week for a really, really fun and entertaining interview with a couple of Brits from Mudford, England. And Mark, tell the folks how you ran across this interview.
This was just something was on a travel. It was on a travel feed about cruise lines, and a couple of cruise lines have parked large cruise ships just off the coast where this a gentleman and his wife, they both coincidentally used to work for cruise lines, run this little ferry service that runs from the mainland to this little beach. It's a 7-minute passenger ferry that they run every 15 minutes all day. Well, they park these cruise ships offshore, and this guy decided to run tours out to them. So it's on it, it just to give you a little bit of a picture. It's Mudford, right?
Mudford. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's on the south coast of England. It's about 2 hours from London and about 30 minutes from Southampton. I think he says that. But it's a couple hours from England, just to give you an idea, on the southern coast of England. And anyway, I think it's truly one of the best interviews and one of the most unique interviews that we've ever had. Luis, let her roll.
Hey there, it's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for joining us. We connect with special guests to help make you a smarter traveler sometimes across the big pond. Mark, you've lined up a really special guest for us today. Why don't you tell us who we're going to be talking to?
This is kind of fun. Paul and Julie are on the line with us, and we're going to talk to them. As you know, COVID has created a situation where cruise ships around the world are basically not sailing. A few of them have tried to start up with mixed success over the last 30 days or so, but it's going to be a while before all these big ships are running around from port to port all around the planet. Now, in the meantime, you say to yourself, what happens to those ships? They park airplanes out in the desert because the humidity is low and it's a good place to keep the planes well preserved. But where do you can't put a cruise ship in the desert? So you have to put it someplace. And the reason we have Paul and Julie on the phone with us is because they're where some of these cruise ships have been taken. Welcome, folks, to the Travel Guys.
Hello there. Hello.
Hi.
So you folks run a ferry service, if I'm correct, off the coast of the UK. Is that right?
Yes, we're in Muddiford, which is near Christchurch, near Bournemouth, 25 miles from Southampton. And we run a ferry service from Muddiford Quay to Muddiford Sandbank, duration about 7 minutes.
And so recently, you guys had some visitors offshore with that. Tell us about your new attraction there offshore and what you folks decided to do about it.
Okay. Well, we came down Muddiford Quay one day, and on the horizon was a ship. And I recognized that ship because I'd actually worked on it. It was a P&O Aurora. I was actually deputy captain of that ship. And I thought to myself, I wonder if people would want to go and see this ship up close. Because you're allowed to go 50 meters, 150 feet away from these things. And so I asked the passengers on board, and they all seemed very keen. So we started doing tours to the ghost ships, as they've been known. The ghost ship, because there's no one on them.
That's amazing. So, that's amazing.
Now, isn't this cool, Tom? I mean, you talk about, you know, somebody taking advantage of a great situation. So, Paul and Julie, are these tours to the ghost ships, we'll call them? Are they part of the regular ferry schedule, or are you making special trips out to see the ships?
No, we're actually making special trips out to see these ships. So many people are quite interested of getting a close-up view.
I think this is just an incredibly, I've been a tour operator for over 40 years, and for a long time I've always said that, you know, bad weather, a mudslide that blocks a road, anything like that has an impact on tourism is... There's somebody who loses, and there's almost always somebody who wins. This is just kind of quirky that folks off the coast of England would be able to make a dollar off the fact that these cruise ships are in your neighborhood all of a sudden. And I think it's just amazingly wonderful. Do you have any idea how long they will be there?
We know they're going to be there to at least mid-October, is what P&O is saying. Cunard have now put their cruises back to not starting before Christmas. And Arcadia, in fact, has cancelled her world cruise January to April. So the season here will push on into September and October, doing these trips, these 2.5-hour trips to these mighty vessels. So say we can get up to 150 feet from them. And some of them are 150 foot high, so it's looking up at them is amazing.
Amazing, yeah. Let me ask you this, if you would, just for our listeners, a little theater of the mind here since we're on radio. Kind of walk me through this in regards to, you know, where people go to get on the ferry, what it is that you do while you're there, traveling out to where the boats are, how many people at a time can you take out on the ferry, and of course with this the COVID situation, and do you have social distancing going on? Just kind of give me a visual of, take me on a trip.
Okay, so we leave Muddiford Quay, we say 2.5 hours, and as the numbers on board, we should take 60 to sea, but we can only take 25 in the present day. And we give them a bit of a history tour on the way out as well. We go past a house. King George III stayed there in about 1800. And as we go past Hengsbury Head, we talk about Stone Age man walked across from France 14,000 years ago because there was no English Channel then. Mm-hmm. And then we start closing in on the ships. You can see them from soon after leaving the harbour. And an interesting fact is I put the radar up. I say, do you know that the land is a mile away and so is the ship. But the ship looks much, much closer. And they're all amazed about that. I go around and talk to all the passengers, ask them where they're from, do the tourist thing. And we found that over half of them have actually been on cruises before. And we went past one ship with a couple the other day and who had just got off this ship, this Royal Caribbean ship. And they said, cool, blimey, I can still get the Wi-Fi.
That is just wonderful. How long do the cruises, do the ghost ship cruises last, Paul?
We go out for 2.5 hours, so the number of ships vary. We go and see one P&O1 and one Royal Caribbean ship usually. I do know the captain of the Aurora at the moment, so he lets me know when he's got to nip into Southampton to fill up with fuel, get stores, and change personnel over.
When you get close to the big ships, the captains that are on board and those that are on board, do you ever see them? Do they wave to you guys on your ferry boat and maybe give you a good old whistle from the ship?
Absolutely. Knowing the captain on board really helps, because as we're going up the side of the ship, he goes to the bridge and he gives us a wave, and they've got this 6-foot-high plywood hand that they wave out at the window at us, and all our passengers wave back. And I ask him if he wouldn't mind tooting the whistle, so I do a did, 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 and he does a did, did.
That is absolutely perfect.
Tom, does this not make you want to, obviously, you know, we can't go to England, but it kind of sort of makes you want to go. Just to do this, for no other reason.
Yeah.
Julie, what has been the reaction so far of the folks who have taken the cruise?
Yeah. Oh, they absolutely love it. In fact, when we get in, you know, they go on to all kinds of sites and compliment us. And, you know, we get a round of applause as they leave the vessel. So, yes, I think they just can't believe how close they can get to these huge monsters.
It's just a great story. It really, really is. And, you know, I'm kind of caught between wishing that the cruise ships sit there for a while. But, of course, if the cruise ships go away, why, then I guess that's a good sign for everybody that the part of the economy, tourism is 10% of the world's economy. So we kind of need to get those cruise ships rolling. But in the meantime, at least somebody has figured out a way to make something positive. Paul and Julie, is there anything else that you would like to share that we haven't touched on?
Oh, well, there is a story I do tell the passengers. When I was on Aurora on her maiden voyage in March 2001, we did go to the aid of a timber carrier that had sunk a few hours ahead of us in the Taiwan Strait. And there was debris, lifeboats, lifebuoys everywhere, and a load of timber, of course. And so much so, the swells were about 5 meters, 15 foot. They're quite big. And then we spotted three people in the water, so we sent our rescue boat away, and we managed to pick up three survivors off this timber carrier that was called Pamela Dream. So I tell them all the story about that, and the two people, or the three people we picked out of the water, they didn't have any documents with them. So the Hong Kong authorities wanted proof that they didn't have any documents, so I've still got the signed letter by the chief officer that he had to leave the ship in 40 minutes because it sunk and he had no paperwork on him at all.
That's an amazing story. Amazing.
Isn't that great? Thank you so much for your time today, folks. And we are going to put, just in case there is somebody who is headed to the United Kingdom or someone to the UK or someone who knows somebody over there and says, wow, this would be an amazing thing. They would want to do this. We're going to put a link to your Facebook page on our website at travelguysradio.com so that folks can learn more about it. And who knows, maybe somebody will wander onto the ferry one day and say, hey, I heard you on the Travel Guys.
That will be absolutely amazing if that happens. We look forward to it. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Outstanding. You guys stay well. Oh, boy, that was so much fun to do.
They were the nicest people.
Check it out once again at travelguysradio.com. Say again, Mark.
They were the nicest people.
Yeah, they were. Okay, Mark is going to put on his one man's opinion hat. Sometimes nice, sometimes not. That's next here on The Travel Guys.
It's time for Just One Man's Opinion. Here's Mark Hoffman.
Travel and tourism represent 10% of the global economy, and it's stuck. As summer in the Northern Hemisphere draws to a close, the season has been a disaster for many tourism-related companies. A lot of these are mom-and-pop, single-owner operations. Sadly, many will not return. That special place you visited or dined in may no longer be a survivor. Airlines are flying with a quarter of their regular traffic, and even if there's another huge taxpayer bailout in the next 3 weeks, they are going to look the way they are right now for the foreseeable future. As we watch big companies and corporations close hotels, stores, and restaurants en masse, we know this whole COVID-19 situation won't turn around on a dime. Or will it? Everyone is convinced it will take a vaccine to get things back to normal. Certainly that would help, and it will save lives. A vaccine might take more than one dose, spread over several weeks or even a month. Who knows how many months it might take for all of it, for it to become available to all travelers. After all, there might be a few groups in front of us with greater priority. Yes, we need a vaccine to protect us from COVID, but what we really need to get people in theaters, ballparks, on planes, and generally have a higher confidence in their personal safety and that of their families while traveling or out in a crowd is a quick COVID test. Abbott Labs announced a 15-minute test a couple of weeks ago. Other reputable companies have made similar pronouncements or have projects in the pipeline. My guess is we are only weeks, or maybe a month or two, away from the availability of a test you could take on the day of travel, which would immediately give you an up or down. It would be your pass to get on the plane, go on the tour, enjoy a night at the theater. Apps on our phones will bring this all together. It's all about confidence over fear. Here's something to consider. If you're 25, losing a year or two to your travel window to the virus might not be the end of your world. But to older travelers, that lost year might be the last one before their travel window closes forever. Time is relative. The older you get, the more precious it becomes. Certainly, you can argue rent and groceries and car payments and the like are far more important than travel. Remember, however, to consider when you dismiss travel as completely unimportant right now, how many people around the world are dependent on the money spent by travelers to feed their families. Yes, travel is personally fulfilling, but it makes so much possible for so many. The jobs it fuels fuel so many other jobs. It's a vital part of the world's economy. It's also one of the ways we come to understand each other a little better. We need a results while you're standing there COVID test, quickly or sooner, because when we get one, life is going to look a lot more normal. And that is just one man's opinion.
All right. Come on, normal. I can hardly wait. Valid points there, Mark, and I think everybody is on board with you on this Just One Man's Opinion. Okay, let's change gears just a little bit and talk about Burning Man. Of course, there was no Burning Man this year, as far as I know.
No,
and it's hard to say whether there'll be one again. You know, Mark, you mentioned at the top of the program, you asked me if I knew that Burning Man started in Golden Gate Park, and I did not know that. Give us a little history.
It hasn't always been out in the middle of the Nevada desert. It started in 1986. This guy named Larry Harvey, a hippie and sometimes vagabond who lived in the Haight-Ashbury district, built an 8-foot human effigy out of lumber scraps on Baker Beach and set it ablaze. And a crowd of about 100 people gathered around the ball of flames at the nudist beach next to the Presidio military installation, not far from Golden Gate Bridge. The moment Harvey poured gasoline over the man and struck the match, people came running from every direction. What started as about a dozen of Harvey's friends and a bonfire became an instant tradition for celebrating summer solstice. So that's why it's at this particular time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Leading up to the fifth year of Burning Man, the Golden Gate Police tolerated the celebration and the bonfire, but it was getting bigger. And in 1990... they put a damper on the celebration because of wildfire concerns. The gathering was allowed, but not the bonfire. So the same year, Bay Area authorities told Mr. Harvey that the event was banned. A bunch of guys and friends of his who helped him build the man every year and helped move him, they decided that they would relocate to some place where no one would bother them. And that some place where no one would bother them happened to be in the middle of the Nevada desert. And so they moved out. They moved the celebration literally out into the middle of the desert, which and now, of course, it's tens of thousands of people. It's an entire community. I mean, it's legendary, and I'm not even going to, because I've never been there, I'm not even going to attempt to try to tell you about it. I have friends who go on a regular basis and have shared some things with me, but it's a very, very unique experience, and it's not for everybody. There's not a 7-Eleven out there when you get out in the middle of the desert, so it's a different sort of situation, but it's not being held this year. But I thought an interesting story that it had originally started with very modest crowds at the end of Golden Gate Park on the beach there in San Francisco. So kind of yeah, interesting if you're a burning. I wonder how many folks out there, maybe somebody who's listening to this might be somebody who attended one of those bonfires on the beach. If you did, if you are listening, and you were at one of those bonfires in the early days of Burning Man, and you'd be kind enough to drop us a note at travelguysradio.com, why maybe we can get together and talk a little bit about that. I think that would be kind of cool. Have you ever been to Burning Man, Tom?
No, I have not. I went to Altamont many, many years ago. Did not do Woodstock, but that's quite a contrast. The large music concert things usually are a couple of days. But Burning Man is quite a bit longer, and it's fascinating. I don't think at my age that I will Burn Man anytime soon, but it's fun to watch. It's fun to follow. You can read a lot about it, see pictures galore online. So it's fascinating. And you know what? I have a feeling it's going to be around for some time to come. Mark, one of the things that my son-in-law brought to my attention the other day, he told me that he was going to take this time to get a passport.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, even though he doesn't have any place to go, he's got his eye on Ireland because it's small. And he's got family that's originally from there. Tell me, what's the story on getting passports?
Well, the Washington Post reported last week. Headline says, State Department says now is a good time to get a passport. And if you read down into the story, you see that since they began resuming operations on a limited basis in mid-June, they've worked through. They had a big backlog, of course, because they hadn't done anything for 3 months. They thoroughly expect that within the next month or so, they will have eliminated all of the backlog, and some offices already have. And so their kind of point is, if you're thinking about traveling next spring or something like that, why not take advantage of this opportunity when there are no lines and life would be very easy to apply for a passport? So I'm going to do that. Mine expired earlier this year, and I didn't have any international trips planned, but it seems like a reasonable thing to do. It's a good idea to go ahead and get it taken care of now. It'll be less of a hassle, and if there is any kind of complication, it'll be much easier to take care of. So follow the advice of the State Department. If your passport is expiring in the next 12 to 18 months and you're somebody who likes to travel internationally, why then you probably should be proactive and take advantage of the slow time now. Tom, I wanted to mention about our show next. First, I want to mention, you've done this a couple times, but at travelguysradio.com, we always list all of the links to folks that are on the show, some of the news items we link, and like the link to the Facebook page for the Ferry folks is there for this week, which if you like that story, you got to go and see their Facebook page. We always put things on there that we don't talk about on the air. And some of them are really cool things, and some of them are very informational, and some of them will just make you laugh. So check it out every once in a while at travelguysradio.com. There's always a list of all the links from the current week and any leftover ones that we felt like had a little bit of a shelf life. Next week, Gary Hogan is going to be our guest. He is from Hawaii. And if there's anybody out there saying, Hogan, Hawaii, why does that sound familiar to me? Well, the Hogan family for many years ran Pleasant Hawaiian Holidays, which at its peak, Gary told us, took 400,000 people a year to Hawaii, about half of those folks from California. So it's entirely possible if you went to Hawaii in the 70s, 80s, or 90s from California, that you that your ground outfitter was Pleasant Hawaiian Holidays. In fact, Sports Leisure Vacations' first few trips were through an agent for Pleasant Hawaiian Holidays. So Gary is going to join us next week and talk about tourism in Hawaii. So, man, I'll tell you what, the Hogan family, they would be the people to be able to tell you they've been there the longest and seen the most stuff. So Gary Hogan with us next week from Hilton, from Hawaiian Hotels.
Outstanding, folks. You stay well. We'll be here next week, same time, 3 o'clock. And again, check us out at TravelGuysRadio.com. Mark?
And dance like nobody's watching. See you next week on the radio at 3 o'clock.
Time to